Betwixt the Veil, Episode 3, Part 2. Within moments, Gemma found herself standing in front of a pair of large, lustrous, dark wooden double doors. She couldn't help feeling nervous and uncertain by some of the events that had transpired this evening. The way Mr. Jennings seemed to know her tastes, the way she felt his allure while simultaneously feeling repulsed by him. Also, the fog that seemed content on muddling her mind while in his presence. This all seemed to be similar to some of the magical skills her father had used on his marks, which he had trained the girls to overcome, yet Jennings couldn't wield magic. She inwardly cursed Reggie for the lack of information and time they had for planning. Either way, she had to complete the exchange, so she strode forward with confidence, swiped the key card, and pushed through the double doors. The entry set the stage for what was to come next. Set with two gold alcoves, flanked by huge urns and a statue of a greyhound on a fine yellow marble floor. A pair of white sliding doors stood open, revealing the elaborate wood-paneled study which contained a wood desk and two armchairs opposite. Gemma could hear jazz music drifting in from off to her left. Passing through another set of open double doors, entering the dimly lit living room, furnished with luxurious white cushioned sofas, club-style armchairs, wood floors, plush dark carpets, and white marble-topped coffee tables. All of the windows looked out on a stunning view of the River Thames South Bank, with the London Eye rotating like a firework spinner dancing amongst the backdrop of the London skyline. The opulence of the place was astounding, but not surprising seeing that the rest of the hotel was equally lavish. Gentleman Jennings sat in one of the sofas, an open bottle of champagne nestled neatly in an ornate ice bucket with two fine crystal champagne flutes arranged before him. Keith had removed his vest jacket and tie. Much to Gemma's relief, they were neatly draped over the club chair that sat opposite Mr. Jennings. The gentleman himself sat with his right leg perched over his left and right arm extended over the back of the sofa. He peered upon Gemma with the hungry eyes of a predator, like a panther before it pounces upon its prey. He smiled and gestured to the champagne and glasses in front of him and said, "Please, Miss Jade, would you pour us some champagne and join me here on the sofa?" She walked forward while pulling the thumb drive case from her purse. She smoothly passed the draped jacket so as to obstruct Jennings' view, a maneuver made easier by the dim lighting. She slid her hand into the inner pocket, deftly exchanging the two items, and gracefully stepped forward while placing the replica in her purse. She then gently placed her purse on the table next to the champagne. She delicately picked up the bottle and proceeded to pour some of the fine bubbly liquid into the two glasses. With that, she placed the bottle back in the ice, picked up both glasses, handed one to Gentleman Jennings, stepped past him, and sitting to the right of him where his arm rested on the back of the sofa. Again, as she sat close to him, she could sense the overwhelming feeling that her perception of him was being manipulated. Being aware of it allowed her to keep the feeling at bay. She smiled up at him, maintaining her composure, for almost all steps of the plan had been completed. Now all she needed to do was sweet-talk him for a while longer, slip into the bathroom, and text Tara that it was time to enact Diversion Plan B. Mr. Jennings smiled back at her and said, "Verily, Miss Jade, you are the most stunning woman I have met. There is just something almost otherworldly about you." Gemma laughed softly, thinking just how right he was, and said, "Well, I'm certain you say that to all the lovely ladies, but I'm definitely one of a kind. Mr. Jennings chuckled softly and replied, "It's just that. You have a certain fire, a spark to you that exudes confidence and a surety that I find deeply alluring. Not to mention that you are a spectacular conversationalist and clearly very intelligent." With that, Mr. Jennings leaned in, his neck swiveling like a bird of prey moving in for the kill. Just as their lips were about to touch, the room's phone began to ring, bringing them to a sudden halt. Gemma's heart fluttered with relief and was extremely thankful for the sudden distraction. There was something deeply wrong with this man. She could feel it emanating off him like the pulse of a dark aura. Mr. Jennings disengaged from her, frowned, and gracefully placed his untouched champagne onto the marble table, swooped around the sofa, and snatched the phone off the cradle. In a curt voice, he said, "This better be important. I'm currently entertaining." Gemma couldn't hear the voice on the other side, but she peered over where Keith was standing and could see the expression of discontent on his face. After a long pause, it morphed, his glower melting into a sneering frown as he said, "Are you certain?" Another pause, and Gemma tensed, for she could feel the shift in his attitude and energy, his tone becoming cold and businesslike. Then he said, "I am sure you can make our new guest comfortable in our special accommodations." He paused as someone on the other side spoke. "No, that will not be necessary. I'm quite capable of handling this situation on my own." With that, Gemma knew something was seriously wrong. She stood slowly, placed her glass down, picked up her purse, and backed out through the clutter of tables, sofas, and chairs, preparing to dash for the door. Jennings sighed and said, "If you insist, but wait 10 minutes before intruding." With that, he calmly placed the phone back on the cradle and turned towards where Gemma now stood. His expression was not one of anger or disgust, but of pure malevolent intent. His leering face displayed a mixture of intrigue and devious desire. "I see you have gathered that something is amiss. I was not wrong in my assessment of your intellect. It seems as though my judgment of your character was clearly far off the mark." Gemma slowly slipped her purse over her shoulder, tightening one of the dainty straps, affixing it tightly to her body. She was thankful in that moment that she had decided to go with flats instead of heels. Mr. Jennings did not seem to notice or care what she was doing. Jennings' blasé attitude conveyed his lack of worry, as the advantages of the situation lay firmly within his control. Gemma had made several contingencies, but none of which included being in this specific room. If she was just able to get out into the hall, she could. Just then, Jennings said, "If you are thinking about running, it would be most unwise, seeing as we already have your accomplice in our custody. I was almost certain when I read you earlier that you were exactly what I assumed you to be. But then again, looks and I guess thoughts can be deceiving. I must know how you did that little trick." Gemma herself was wondering just how he was capable of his mind-reading attempt. She had not sensed any magical aura about Mr. Jennings, yet she could now confirm his intended trespass. Gemma just glared back at him, crossed her arms, and said in an off-handed tone, "I certainly won't be revealing any of my tricks to you, and I don't know what you mean by my accomplice. I always work alone." Mr. Jennings stood there, quizzically tipping his head to the side as he smirked wickedly and said, "That's odd, because the way they described her sounded as though she may be of familial relation.
Oh, well, I guess we won't be needing to keep her around in that case. I will just have my men do with her as they please. They haven't had some proper sport in a while, and I am certain they will enjoy a distraction with a fine young thing such as her.
He raised an eyebrow as he gave her a questioning look. Gemma did not respond to his jibe, but instead crossed her arms and glared back at him as if calling his bluff. Jennings strode over to where his coat lay draped over the chair and retrieved his mobile phone from one of the pockets. He switched it on, the light of the screen casting his face in an artificial blue halo, making his angular features haunting as he pressed a button. It rang once, and another voice on the other end spoke. This time, Gemma could hear it.
How can we help, Mr. Jennings? Would you like us to send someone in now?
Jennings smiled broadly and said,
That won't be necessary, but you can inform George and his men that our new guest in our special accommodations wing...
At that moment, Gemma shot forward, knocking the phone from his hand, ending the call abruptly. She kicked out at Mr. Jennings and swept his legs, slamming him into the hardwood floor with a crash, wrapping her hand firmly around his throat as her knee pressed into his chest, putting pressure on his solar plexus. She glared down into his face as he gurgled a laugh through his clenched teeth. Just then, the doors to the entrance flew open and the sound of boot heels came rushing in. Gemma released her grip on Mr. Jennings' throat and stood upright, facing the five men in masks and tactical gear entering with SMGs trained on her. Before they could fire, Jennings croaked out,
I want her alive!
They let their guns drop to their sides and advanced on her. As they approached, Gemma flooded her body with enhancement magic, magnifying her speed and reflexes. It's one thing to fight untrained lackeys with their standard skills, but it's another thing altogether to face off with five clearly well-trained private security guards. The one in the rear pulled out a taser and fired, but her amplified reflexes allowed her to see it coming, and she dodged to the side, leapt off the back of one of the chairs into the air, and slammed her knee into the face of the closest assailant. She could feel the cartilage in his nose shatter as he cried out, crumpling to the floor. Now away from the furniture, she quickly regained her footing as one of the men reached out to choke her. As she ducked back while kicking out, he blocked with his left hand and threw a right hook. Gemma ducked it easily, but as she did, one of his companions delivered a hard kick to her ribs, making her gasp and stumble to the side. The remaining four took the opportunity to surround her. One pulled out a stun gun, lunging in to incapacitate her. She grabbed his wrist and twisted, snapping it, using the kinetic energy to guide it straight into the neck of the man standing behind her. He dropped to the floor, convulsing. The man's hand, who she held, cried out but was quickly silenced as she swiftly rammed her head into his face. She let go at the same time, sending the man stumbling back into the furniture and tables a few paces behind him, scattering the champagne and glasses to the floor. Just then, Gemma's momentum was brought to an abrupt halt as an elbow slammed into the back of her head. She stumbled backwards, slumping to the ground, not fully unconscious, but severely stunned. Moments later, two men were grabbing her, fastening zip ties around her wrists and ankles. She was unceremoniously plopped onto the couch as her vision spun and she tried to refocus. Now things were not going at all well. All plans and contingencies were thrown out the window. As her vision cleared, she took in her surroundings once again. The two remaining men in tactical gear, which she now assumed were Mr. Jennings' private security, stood looming over her. Another man had entered the room, and she could finally see his features more clearly. It was the wattle-faced host from downstairs who was inspecting the other three men who were strewn about the room and unconscious. One with a small stream of blood pouring from his face onto the fine rug, likely dead. One still twitching slightly from being tased, and the other with his hand jutting out at an odd angle. The champagne bottle and glasses were smashed. The tables and chairs were overturned and trampled, adding to the mixed detritus strewn all about the room. Gemma felt rather satisfied with the outcome of it all, even though her beautiful Shongsam dress was now torn and rumpled. Mr. Jennings stepped forward, looking not too pleased, and said,
"Well, I see there was quite a bit more fight in you than I expected. It looks as though you killed one of my best men. A pity that."
To be honest, he did not look at all disturbed by the fact. "If that was your best," Gemma spat out, "maybe you should look for some better help." Jennings just chuckled and said,
Now, let us try this again."
He held up his now slightly damaged phone.
"Your accomplice, who from your reaction and some of the photos my men messaged me while you were tussling with these gentlemen here, I can now presume her to be your sister."
Gemma didn't acknowledge his comment, but could tell from his face that it was not really a guess.
"You two, and likely others, thought it a good idea to try and lift some very important information off of me," Jennings said chidingly. "I do commend you for the attempt, and you may have gotten away with it if not for one of my men catching the odd exchange downstairs in the Buford bar."
Gemma thought back to the moment where she had stumbled and her shadow cloak had seemed to ripple, and the man who was seemingly reading his book. She cursed inwardly for not noticing the man earlier, but how had he seen through her shadow cloak? Jennings, as if sensing her thoughts, said,
"Oh, don't worry, dear. It was by no fault of yours. Me and my men have been developing some trinkets that help us detect or interfere with your kind's abilities."
Gemma's eyes momentarily widened. This was a greatly disquieting revelation, as she had never heard of any objects that could interfere with Fae powers. Gemma just glared up at Mr. Jennings and said,
"Seeing as you seem to have it all figured out, what is it that you want with me and my sister? I take it you want something, seeing as we likely wouldn't be alive otherwise."
Mr. Jennings assessed her with his calculating gaze and said,
"Firstly, I would like to know who else you were working with and how they knew about this nifty little drive of mine."
Gemma barked out a laugh and said,
"I wouldn't tell you even if we were working for someone. Let's just say I have many a skill beyond what you've seen here tonight."
Mr. Jennings sighed heavily and said,
"Well, I guess you're not likely to give up any information so easily. You will have time enough to tell me what I want to know."
Jennings paused as if considering, then said, "How about I offer you an opportunity to redeem yourself and get your sister back inviolate?
This way we can build a little trust between us and perhaps write this whole unpleasant business off as a nasty misunderstanding."
He finished with one of his maniacal grins. It was almost as if this was the intended outcome, and he had been leading the proverbial narrative to the suspected conclusion all along. She could use her powers to get out of the zip ties, but had no idea where her sister was, and now, with the knowledge of the items that could negate her powers, made her uncertain she could even make it out the building alive. So, she decided to play along with Jennings for the present.
"So, what are these favors that will put me back in your so-called good graces and return my sister to me?"
Jennings smiled ghoulishly back at her and said,
"The first favor I would like to request should be rather easy for someone with your skills."
He gestured to the room around him and gazed through her as though looking beyond the present.
"There will be a young man with blondish red hair by the name of Lucien.
He will be arriving at Paddington Station on Platform 7 on the 11:32 a.m. Heathrow Express, a week and one day from now. He will be carrying a very precious ring hung about his neck. You are to remove it from his person without him noticing and bring it back here without delay. How he knew all of this disturbed Gemma greatly. But what choice did she have?
I'll do it. But I must have your word that my sister will be safely returned to me when both tasks are completed.
She said this, knowing that in that moment she would end up regretting it.